Ever watch a movie and can't stop staring at the clothing, or wonder why a costume designer chose to dress a character like that? Join Michaela and Samantha, two media production students with a passion for fashion, as we dive into the deep world of costume design and try to connect the dots between close-ups and corsets.
Hi guys, hope everyone's having a great day, and welcome to the first episode of Close-Ups and Corsets. We're your hosts, Michaela Gia.
And I am Samantha T.
Today we're going to be looking at Little Women, the 2019 film directed by Greta Gerwig that tells the story of four sisters living in Civil War era Massachusetts as they come to age. And the film takes place in the 1860s and flashes forward and back between the decade, going between the sisters' adolescence and adulthood.
This goes without saying, but there will be spoilers, although the book did come out in, like, 1868. So, like, if you don't know the plot, that's kind of on you at this point. But there will be spoilers.
It's kind of on you.
Okay, so just so we have a quick roundup of the characters, the sisters, in order of age, are Meg, played by Emma Watson, who is the romantic eldest sister.
And then there's Jo, played by Saoirse Ronan, the tomboyish writer, who's also kind of like the main character.
Yep. And then there's Beth, who is played by Eliza Scanlon. She is the quiet peacemaker who falls ill towards the end of the movie.
And then there's Amy, played by the ever-lovely Florence Pugh, the artistic but pragmatic youngest sister.
So other characters include Laurie, their wealthy neighbor. He is played by heartthrob Timothée Chalamet. Let me say, this is the movie that gave me a crush on Timothée Chalamet.
I gotta agree.
He is so gorgeous in this movie, but that's neither here nor there. He expresses romantic interests in Jo initially, but eventually marries Amy.
Spoiler! And there's also James Lawrence, the grandfather of Laurie and benefactor of Beth.
There is Aunt March, who is played by Meryl Streep. She is the sister's wealthy spinster aunt who pressures them to follow social conventions, such as getting married, rich, and being a lady, and all that.
And then there's Marmee, their mother, who is a feminist icon of the time, if you ask me.
Yeah, she's kind of a girl boss, not gonna lie. There's also Friedrich, who is a professor who works at the same boarding house as Jo in New York.
And also love interest, potentially.
Question mark?
And then there's John, who's Laurie's tutor, and then later on, Meg's husband.
Yeah, so those are kind of all the important characters in the movie. First of all, I'm going to say, like, this movie changed me. Like, the first time I watched it, like, I tell everybody who has, like, an interest in writing specifically, and women who have, like, interests in writing, to, like, watch this movie. Because, like, we mentioned earlier, like, Jo is a writer. And so it's just the entire plot is just centers around, like, owning your work and, like, all that. Mm-hmm. I don't know, man. Like, this movie means so much to me. I was like, we gotta do this one for the pod.
Yeah. I actually only watched this movie for this podcast, but I really liked it. I really enjoyed it. It was very wholesome, and like, I almost cried at several points. So,
oh yeah. Like, and I think I really like it because it's not actually very plot heavy. Mm-hmm. It's
really just a coming of age, like a good coming of age movie set in 1860 America.
Yeah. Exactly. And like, it's really interesting because you think about, like, I don't know, I feel like for a movie that is set in that time, it is like still
relevant.
Really relevant. Yeah. Yeah. And like, I suppose like that has to do with like, it came out in 2019, but like, I read the book as a kid, and like, I feel like a lot of the story beats are very similar.
Yeah.
So I think that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, Michaela. Jo and Amy are like the standout sisters for me
for sure.
In this movie.
Yeah.
Like,
looking at the, like, while watching the movie, like, their Jo and Amy's costumes, I think definitely stood out to me the most. Like, that beginning scene where Jo is like running through the streets. She's so like, I don't give a shit. I mean business. I'm a tomboy, you know, like, amazing.
Yeah, and I think, and then it contrasts that, like, the next scene immediately is, like, Amy in this beautiful dress and, like, a carriage. And, like, already, yeah. like, you can see they are the most opposite of the sisters.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Yeah. So, did you want to get into costuming?
Please.
Like we mentioned earlier, the film takes place in the 1860s, so there are obviously like very different social conventions when it comes to women and clothing and how they should dress and what is proper and what is not. And I'm pretty sure Jo breaks like every single convention.
Yeah. Her hair's down. She doesn't give a shit. She's like, she never wears a corset.
She doesn't wear hoop skirts.
Yeah, no hoop skirts.
Yeah.
She's kind of almost like... I noticed she has a lot of androgynous elements to her costume.
Yeah,
like, she
definitely.
Wears like these vests that mm-hmm. She like also shares with Lori.
Yeah, she wears like cravats and stuff too. Like,
mm-hmm.
and
wait, what's a cravat?
It's like a fancy tie. Like, you know, in the scene where she's running, it's like that red tie.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think there's something to be said about like. The way that she is so actively opposing social convention. And, like, I think it lines up really, really well with her character because her character is, like, also, like, super tomboyish and, like, you know, doesn't care about convention and actively is like, no, screw this. Like, I don't want to, like, get married or, like, mm-hmm. like that's not my ambition. And, like, even, like, Meg gets married and she's like, Meg, are you sure you want to do this? Like, I don't... You're going to give up your freedom. Like, I think that's something that's super important to Jo is, like, freedom. And, like, mm-hmm. with that...
The whole reason why she, like, turns down Lori.
Exactly.
As much as, like, they love each other. Although, mm-hmm. it's probably more like siblings, but, yeah.
Exactly. I feel like her costuming... Like, even if you think about, like, the lack of corsets, the lack of, like, mm-hmm. hoop skirts, that's also, like... She's literally physically, like, free. Like, there is nothing mm-hmm. binding her at all.
Yeah. That's a really good point, actually. Yeah. And even, like, her skirts, they're, like, they're almost like trousers, like, bordering on. But, like, they're not really trousers. But they look kind of look like trousers. And, you know,
yeah, she, like, hikes them up a lot.
Yeah. And she kind of, like, you get the sense that she kind of... has the same, I don't know how to put it, like the same amount of power as what a man normally would, or she's trying to have the same amount of power that a man normally would in her world.
Yeah.
And she's just like, I'm going to do what I want. I'm going to own my work. And yeah, I'm going to do what I want.
She's not going to bend to like social conventions. And I really enjoy like, so I'm going to get into this when we get into Meg, this pisses me off so much when it comes to Meg, but with Jo, it's perfect. So social convention back in the day, as if I was alive back then, was that women were to wear their hair up, mm-hmm. like if they were adults. If they're children, they can wear their hair down like that. But like once you've come of age, once you're an adult, you have to have your hair up. And Jo's hair is like constantly down.
Yeah. Even when it's up, like... Oh my God, yeah, she does.
Yeah.
She's like, even though she's upset about it, but she's the sister that like cuts all of her hair off.
Yeah.
And even when her hair is up, it's like never like kind of like properly up. You get the sense that she just
like,
kind
it's not
of like.
Tidy.
Yeah, that she just like swept it up and then she's like busy writing. She doesn't have time to do her hair and stuff.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like, she's very much, like, her hair is up so it's out of the way and not because, like...
Exactly.
It's supposed to be up, you know?
Her fashion is, like, very, like, functional and utilitarian.
Yes, absolutely. And, like, I'm going to get into the Meg thing because it's relevant. And Michaela has heard me rant about this. So, Meg is the eldest sister and she is like canonically she is like the one who like wants like the wealth and like riches when they're like younger like she is mm-hmm. like because the Marches aren't like super rich like they're like a little bit down on their luck and like But, like, Meg wants all these beautiful things. And, like, we're even introduced to her. She's in, like, a dress shop. And, like, one of the other women is like, you should buy this beautiful fabric for a dress. And Meg's like, oh, no, I can't afford it. Which, like...
But then she does.
But then she does.
Puts her, like, family and husband into, like...
financial distress.
Yeah, by buying this fabric for her dress. And, like, you do see parallels of, like, Meg when she's a kid. She's also, like, kind of, like, obsessed with fashion. Like, she breaks her ankles because she's wearing, like, these beautiful shoes. And then, like, someone's like, oh, one of these days you're going to kill yourself over fashion. So she does love beautiful things.
Yeah. And Meg cares about what other people think of her. Like in the initial scene, she only buys that fabric because the other woman pressures her to. So now I'm going to make the point. Why is Meg's hair down so often? It shouldn't be. If she cares that much about what other people think of her and she cares about presenting herself fancy and nice and like up to social convention, why is her hair always down? And there's like no answer for it. And it makes me so angry because like with Joe, you can tell it's a character choice. Like it's, but like with Meg, like, I understand Emma Watson has beautiful hair. That's not the point.
She does. Okay, but my argument is that Meg has her hair down because she's inconsistent and doesn't know what she wants. Like, she claims she knows what she wants, but she doesn't really know what she wants. Because she, like, says she's like, oh, I want to, like, get married and have kids and, like, be very, like, what is the word? Like, she cares a lot about how she presents herself. But then she goes and, like, following social conventions of her time, marrying rich and stuff. But then what actually happens is she's, like, a romantic. And then she goes off and marries, like, this, like, not penniless, but, like, nearly penniless tutor.
He's not very rich, yeah. And, like...
And then her wedding dress is, like, this, like, romantic... little thing that
it looks like
it's out of
it
Reformation.
Like it's very flowy and like hippie and like it's so inconsistent with like her characterization, which is like, but like, is her characterization supposed to be inconsistent? Like, I think that's the
point.
Yeah,
like
that you're
making. I feel like she's like supposed to be inconsistent. It like shows how she's like, she has like her dream fantasy marriage, and then later on you kind of, like, see her have to deal with the actual reality of marriage.
That's... I suppose that is true, because, like, when she gets married, her hair is, like, constantly up after that. Her clothing is a lot more pragmatic, and, like, they try to make Emma Watson look, like, tired and haggard. She doesn't. Like, she's still beautiful. But, like the point is, like, she's always, like, wiping her hands on, like, her apron and stuff. It's like And, like, the flashbacks of, like, the younger years, she has, like, this fantasy of, like, what she envisions. And, like, she meets this guy and she's like, oh, I can have it with that guy. And then she gets married to him. She's like, oh,
but
like,
I
she
can't
loves
have
him.
It. Yeah,
she loves him. But, like, it's not, she loves him as a person, but he doesn't come with kind of, like, the beautiful things that she imagined the perfect guy would come with or whatever.
For sure. Also, another thing with the hair, she also doesn't, like, she only wears a corset, like, half the time in the movie, but she's also the married one, and she's supposed to be wearing a corset, like, all the time after marriage.
Yeah, that's true. And also, like, even, like, okay, corsets were, like, they're not just for fancy dresses. Like, there's, like, this popular misconception now that corsets were, like, a form of torture or whatever. They were, like, bras. Like,
they were literally, like, bras.
They were just, like, undergarments.
For support.
Yeah.
Like, basically, yeah.
They were not there to, like, the whole, like, corset, like, waist-cinching thing is very, very recent. And, like, I will appreciate that Little Women doesn't do what a lot of, like, historical films do, in that they'll, like, have a scene where, like, a character is being laced up and they're like, go tighter, you know? I really appreciate that
they
didn't do it.
Oh, God, I
hate
those scenes.
Yeah,
I'm
those
sorry.
Get me so angry. But,
yeah.
But I do appreciate that they didn't kind of, like, emphasize that. But, yeah, justice for corsets in historical films, I think. They get a bad rap.
You know who we never see wear a corset, though? Beth. Which makes sense, because
Beth is always, like, at home.
Yeah, I feel like she's like the equivalent of a character always being in their pajamas, but like Victorian version.
Yeah, I think for the other three sisters, we've seen them at parties or like...
We've seen them grow up at home, out in like just all these like different scenarios. Mm-hmm. But Beth is just like, she's always like seen in the context of the home. She goes out like a couple times.
She goes out once. Or like, I guess it's implied several times to like
Lori's
grandpa's house. To like play their piano and like, yeah. But like, and then I guess the beach when they all went to the beach, but she's very like homely. And I think that's why, yeah. Again, spoilers to everybody who hasn't watched the movie and cares about this. Beth dies. Like she dies. I think towards the back half of the movie, she's just sick in bed like the whole time.
Yeah. I feel like her, like, always being in nightgowns and never really getting to, like, explore outside of that much. It kind of, like, is almost, like, metaphorical of, like, how her life has been, like, cut short. And she,
yeah,
doesn't get to, like, you know, like, wear these beautiful or, like, freeing or whatever,
yeah,
utilitarian things that the rest of the sisters do. Because, you know, she's sick and then, yeah, spoiler, yeah, she dies.
So. But yeah, so Beth, I feel like there's a stagnation in her like growth as a person.
Oh, yeah.
Because like we see Joe in the boarding house in New York. We see Meg go off and get married. We see Amy in Paris, and Beth is just at home. And like, mm-hmm, I think the fact that also her clothing doesn't really change throughout the years. 'Cause like, Amy for sure, and like even Meg, you can see that like in the younger years they dress differently than they do when they're older. Beth is like always wearing this, like I'm pretty sure you could pull a screen cap from like either one, and if you like change the color grading, I would be like, yeah, like I could not tell you if this is from like a yeah, flashback or like, you know. I don't know, I don't have that much to say about Beth other than just like she's
basically
almost like she's like the figure of the home.
Yeah. No, I feel like that's a very good analysis and representation. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like she, like when she dies, her sisters are all off doing their own thing. Like her dying, like I know that they said that Meg getting married was the signifier of the end of their childhood, but I think really it's Beth dying, and then there's like Marmee has no one with her at home anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like that is like really the end of their childhoods, and like
that's when they really
they can
grow
never
up.
Get it back.
Yeah,
exactly. Mm-hmm.
Beth's kind of like the last connection to like their childhood.
Exactly. And like even though they've already kind of like left, they were always able to like come back home, right? But like at that point, the personification of quote unquote the home is literally dead, because Beth we don't have to keep talking about how Beth dies. But yeah, I think that it's really interesting that Beth is actually older than Amy.
Oh yeah.
That's
I didn't
weird.
Actually realize that until you told me. For some reason I was under the impression that Amy's the second youngest, but no, that makes sense because Amy's like the baby of like the family.
Yeah, Amy's kind of like the most, I guess, the most immature as well. Like she like burns,
she starts out the most immature.
Yeah, she burns Joe's manuscripts. You know, she like does like these like little drawings of their teacher at school and like gets her hand like lashed for it. Like she's definitely the most quote unquote like controversial of the sisters. Mm-hmm. Like, Joe was controversial in, like, pushing gender norms and stuff for the time. But, like, Amy's mm-hmm. controversial just, like, as a person. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes sense. But, like, yeah.
I think I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
but then, like, it's interesting because she grows up to be the one who kind of, like, follows social conventions the most or the most well.
Yeah,
like it's kind of like there's this scene where she's at her Aunt March's house, and then her Aunt March like gets her what do you it's like beckons her over, and then She's like, yeah, and she's like, the rest of your family is hopeless. You have to marry rich and take care of your family. And, like, Amy's just, like, a kid at this point. She's, like, painting and shit. And she's like, okay. And then Anna March is like, okay, you can go back to your painting. And then Amy's like, oh, okay. But then it's interesting because later on, in the movie, while she's also painting, like, she has this, like, whole speech about, like, social conventions.
Oh, and, like, yes. Like, to Lori. To put this into context, like, Amy is in Paris studying for art, but she's also with Aunt March, and Lori is also in Paris. And then Amy has just, like, she's awaiting a proposal from, like, this rich guy, and honestly, I forget his name. Fred Vaughn, actually, I think
Fred
Vaughn,
yeah.
And she's like, yeah, I'm going to marry him. Like, and then Lori's like, why would you marry him? Like, do you even know him? And do you love him? And Amy's like, well, I believe that you have control over the people you love. And, like, as a woman, it is the most pragmatic decision for me to marry someone that I enjoy spending company, like, spending time with. Maybe he's not my true love, but he can provide for me because my money is not my own. You know, my children, if I have any, are not going to be my own. Like, this is all going to belong to my husband. So, like, I don't know. She goes, like, marriage is an economic proposition.
Mm-hmm. And, like, it may not be for Lori, but for Amy as a woman in the 1860s, it definitely is an economic proposition.
Yeah. And she knows how to play the game. Like, she understands, like, you know, Meg, I think, also understood, like, the kind of, like, you know, tit for tat.
Meg understands the game, but then, like, kind of, like, doesn't end up actually following through. Exactly.
Meg lets herself, like, get swept up in, like, kind of, like, the romanticism of it all. But, like, Amy is very practical. And, like, even in the way she dresses, you know, again, Meg is inconsistent. Her hair's down, whatever, you know.
Amy's very consistent.
Amy is incredibly consistent with social conventions.
She's neat. She's always got her hair perfectly up. She's always wearing a corset. She's always in these, like, beautiful, like, blue gowns.
Yes.
She just, like, presents herself through clothing and, like, she really knows how to, like, follow those social conventions to, like, the best and, like, make it stylish.
Oh, absolutely. Like, if you even just contrast Amy and Joe, like, they are fully on opposite ends of the spectrum in the way that they dress. And, like, I think it's actually really interesting that it's Amy and Joe that are kind of, like, contending for Lori. Well, Joe's not really contending, but, you know, like, Lori's love interests are Joe.
And they're so different.
Amy. And they're so different. And, like, we touched upon this a little bit earlier, but, like, Joe and Lori, like, share clothes. Like, the costume designers and, like, the director, Greta Gerwig, like, they did this intentionally. Like, they had just, like, clothing pieces that
they would both wear.
Exactly. And whereas, like, we never see that kind of, like, camaraderie between, like, Amy and Lori. But I think that's actually why it makes sense that they end up together. Because, like,
Lori and Joe are more, like, siblings. And
I agree.
Best friends rather than, like, love interests. And I think Lori's character, like, kind of, like, I think you said this earlier. Like, he sees Joe as, like, something to look up to because how did you say it again?
It's Joe's, like, aspirational for Lori. Like, he's like, oh, this is who I want to be. But Lori, he's like, oh, I hate all these, like, social functions and this and that.
He's like,
and all
I
hate
fuss and feathers. And I think that's part of the big appeal for him of Joe.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, in the end, too bad, Lori. Like, you are rich. This is just your life. And, like, we've seen him. He is also, like, acutely aware, maybe not from a gender standpoint, but, like, from an expectation standpoint of, like, what is expected of him. And in the same way that, like, Amy is. And I don't know, it, like, breaks my heart. Like, there's this one scene where Lori makes a move on Amy and she goes, oh, I won't be the person that you go for just because you can't have Joe. I think about that sometimes and I just, like, it's painful to, like, watch that scene, but, like, in the end, like, Lori doesn't pick Amy because he can't have Joe. He picks Amy because in a way that, like, Joe is aspirational in, like, a rebellious way, Amy is aspirational in, like, this kind of pragmatic, practical way, I think. Yeah.
No, I think they work together like way better as like a couple than like Joe and Laurie, for sure.
Yeah. And in the end, like, okay, so the ending, question mark. Like,
question mark.
Does the Joe end up with anyone? The umbrella scene.
It's like, literally called that, like, yeah. The umbrella scene.
It's, like,
basically, Friedrich comes back to see Joe in Massachusetts, and then he's like, oh, okay, well, he, like, meets their family and everything, and then eventually he's like, oh, okay, I must get going, and then it was great being here. I'm going off to California. Come visit me if you want. And Joe's like, maybe not, probably not. And then
she runs after him as he catches his train afterwards, like in the rain, and it's like romantic.
And
scene,
then they kiss, like, and then they're like, she's like, I do want to be with you and everything. But then you kind of like cuts to like there, Joe sitting at like the publisher's office.
Yes, because this entire time, like, Joe was like writing a book based on her and her sister's lives, and like her publisher is like, no, your main character, which like Joe. Needs to end up with somebody, and like, and then that's when it cuts to that umbrella scene, and then after mm-hmm. the scene, the publisher is like, that's perfect, that's so romantic, everyone's gonna eat that up. So the question becomes like, did Joe just make that up? But I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think the answer is it doesn't matter.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, like, honestly, I feel like, you know, yeah, I don't have anything to say. It's just like, yeah, the ending's ambiguous, doesn't really matter. It's like,
yeah, like I think the entire point of the movie is that like it's about the relationship between the sisters and not about romantic interests. Like mm-hmm. the romantic interests are very like sidelined. The only important one, I suppose, is Laurie, but he's only important because of his friendship with Joe. And like maybe he doesn't see it as just a friendship, but Joe just sees it as a friendship.
Yeah.
You know, eventually like she'll be like, oh, maybe I want to be with Laurie, but like she doesn't, though. She just, like, wants someone because her sisters have someone, mm-hmm. you know?
It's interesting because
finish your thought.
Oh, I was going to say, it's interesting because, like, the message being, like, oh, it doesn't really matter who she ends up with. It's, like, something that's, it was, like, it's considered, like, oh, my God, what? Like, 160 years ago. And then even now, it's still, like, wait, it's like such a like mind-blowing thing. Wait, like it doesn't matter who she ends up with. It's like she's her own person. And like
mm-hmm. like this discourse of like who Joe should have ended up with or who Laurie should have ended up with is like 160 years old, which is so yeah, this discourse around who Laurie should have ended up with, Joe or Amy, is 160 years old, and like it doesn't matter because Joe, like, the love of Joe's life is her book. It doesn't matter whatever guy comes into her life. Like, the love of her life is writing. And, like, that's what matters. Exactly. And, like, I think that the movie does a really good job of, like, pushing this point. Like, I watched it with a couple of my friends, and they were like, who does she end up with? Who does she end up with? And they paused, and they were like, oh, my God, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Like, that's not what it's about. Like, this is not a rom-com. Mm. This is a coming-of-age movie.
Yeah.
You know?
And it, like, kind of, like, circling back. It's like, everything that happens in the book and movie are, like, still relevant 160 years later, which is interesting because, like,
oh, absolutely,
it's set in the 1860s, but it's at the end of the day, it's like a coming of age movie with these sisters and like how they like kind of like traverse through the world. And like, mm-hmm. even Amy's like marriage is an economic proposition speech, I found it was very relevant in the 1860s. And I feel like, honestly, a lot of women would probably like kind of agree with the sentiment even today, even though...
Yeah, like, it still kind of hits, yeah. You know? I think the way that they costumed this film, just in general, even though I have problems with men, but you know what? You make a compelling argument. I think the way that they costume each character so kind of specifically also kind of helps shape the way we view them and the way we view anything that they say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's really interesting because, like, if the marriage is an economic proposition speech came from Joe, in her, like, because it's something Joe could also have said.
Yeah.
Like, Joe is also very smart. But if it came from her, I don't think it would have hit as hard. Because we see, like, Amy is so ingrained in this social convention. Mm-hmm. And, like, you think she knows exactly what to do, right? Like, you see her as someone who knows exactly what to do.
She knows how to play the game.
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. And, like, there's Amy who plays the game and Joe who chooses not to play. Mm-hmm. And, like, by having them be opposites throughout the entire movie and have them be dressed oppositely and just visually look very different. Like, even Florence Pugh and Saoirse Ronan, they visually are just, like, very different. Mm-hmm. Saoirse Ronan is very, like, you know, like, tall and, like, thin. And, like, Florence Pugh, you know, she's, like, smaller. She's more petite, right? And, like, just the extreme contrast between them visually also helps to serve kind of, like, the fact that both of them could have made the same point about, like, marriage as an economic proposition. Like, they think actually really similarly, mm-hmm. but the yeah. fact that they're presented so differently, I think, is really, really interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of like you see the way that they've come to their conclusions are different, and you, like, kind of, like, realize that through the costuming.
Exactly.
If that makes sense.
No, I totally get that.
Like, the costuming is what, like, makes them different, or, like, really makes you, like, sells the point that, like, these are, like, different sisters, even though, like, they're very, like, similar in, like, their ways of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it gives each of them more of, like, a kick, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think that this was a really amazing discussion. I think this is where we're going to have to end it off for this episode. I love this movie. Highly recommend it for those of you who haven't seen it but still decided to listen to this.
It's a beautiful movie.
Incredible movie. Yeah. I know we spoiled it, but it's the journey, not the destination.
Yeah.
And yeah, so thank you, Michaela.
Thank you, Sam. Okay, so next time we'll be looking at the 2021 Disney live-action movie Cruella, starring Emma Stone.
Very excited. I still haven't seen it, so this is going to be fun.
I haven't seen it either, but I feel like people were... It was a controversial movie.
Yeah.
So...
We'll see. We'll see how divisive this gets.
Yeah.
All right. Well, mm-hmm. we'll see you guys next time on Close-Ups and Corsets. Hope you have a great rest of your day. Or afternoon or evening, whatever time you're listening to this. And we'll see you next time. Bye.
Bye.